Chapter 13. The atmosphere in the Ice Hunter's dining room had a strange mood of subdued festivity. The occasion was a farewell party thrown by the crew and scientists for the survivors of the Polar Queen tragedy. Roy Van Fleet and Maeve had been working day and night, shoulder to shoulder, for the past 3 days, examining the remains of the penguins, seals, and dolphins collected for study, and filling notebooks full of observations. Van Fleet had grown fond of her, but he stopped short of demonstrating any kind of affection. The vision of his pretty wife and 3 children was seldom out of his mind. He was sorry they couldn't have continued working together. The other scientists in the lab agreed that they made a great team. The Ice Hunter's chef did himself proud with an incredible gourmet dinner featuring fillets of deep-sea cod with mushroom and wine sauce. Captain Dempsey looked the other way while the wine flowed. Only the officers standing watch over the operation of the ship had to remain dry, at least until they came off duty and it was their turn to party. Dr. Mose Greenberg, the shipboard wit, made a long speech laced with banal puns about everyone on board. He might have kept pontificating for another hour if Dempsey hadn't signaled for the chef to bring out a cake especially baked for the occasion. It was shaped like the continent of Australia, with icing picturing the more notable landmarks, including Ayers Rock and Sydney Harbor. Maeve was truly touched, and tears moistened her eyes. Deirdre appeared bored with it all. As captain, Dempsey sat at the head of the longest table, the women sitting in honor at his elbows. Because he was head of NUMA's Special Projects Division, Pitt was allotted the chair at the opposite end of the table. He tuned out the conversations flowing around him and focused his attention on the 2 sisters. They couldn't have come out of the womb more unalike, he thought. Maeve was a warm and wild creature, a light brightly glowing with life. He fantasized her as a friend's untamed sister washing a car, clad in a tight T-shirt and cut-off shirts, while displaying her girlish waist and shapely legs to great advantage. She had changed since he first met her. She talked exuberantly, her arms swaying for effect, vivacious and unpretentious. And yet her manner seemed oddly forced, as if her thoughts were elsewhere and she were under some unknown stress. She wore a short-skirted red cocktail dress that fit her figure as if it were sewn on after she was in it. Pitt thought at first it was loaned to her by one of the women scientists on board who wore a smaller size. And then he recalled seeing her return with Deirdre from Polar Queen on Ice Hunter's shoreboat with their luggage stacked in the bow. She wore yellow coral earrings that matched the necklace around her bare neck. She glanced in his direction and their eyes met, but only for an instant. She was in the midst of describing her pet dingo in Australia, and she quickly looked back at her audience as if she hadn't recognized him. Deirdre, on the other hand, exuded sensuality and sophistication, traits sensed by every man in the room. Pitt could easily picture her stretched out on a bed covered with silk sheets, beckoning. The only drawback was her imperious manner. She had seemed retiring and vulnerable when he'd found her on Polar Queen. But she too had transformed into a cool and aloof creature. There was also a flinty hardness Pitt had not recognized before. She sat in her chair straight-backed and regal in a brown sheath dress that stopped discreetly above her silk-stockinged knees. She wore a scarf around her neck that accented her fawn eyes and copper hair, which was drawn severely back in a huge knot. As if sensing that Pitt was studying her, she slowly turned and stared back at him without expression. And then the eyes became cool and calculating. Pitt found himself engaged in a game of wills. She was not about to blink, even as she carried on a conversation with Dempsey. Her eyes seemed to look through him, and, finding nothing of interest, continued on to a picture hanging on the wall behind. The brown eyes that were locked on opal and green never wavered. She obviously was a lady who held her own against men, Pitt reasoned. Slowly, very slowly, he began to cross his eyes. The comical ploy broke the spell and Deirdre's concentration. Thrusting her chin up in a haughty gesture, she dismissed Pitt as a clown and turned her attention back to the conversation at her end of the table. Though Pitt felt a sensual desire for Deirdre, he felt himself drawn to Maeve. Perhaps it was her engaging smile with the slight gap between the teeth, or the beautiful mass of incredibly blonde hair that fell in a cascade behind and in front of her shoulders. He wondered about her shift of manner since he first found her in the blizzard on Seymour Island. The ready smile and the easy laugh were no longer there. Pitt sensed that Maeve was subtly under Deirdre's control. It was also obvious to him, if to no one else, there was no love lost between them. Pitt mused about the age-old choice faced by the sexes. Women were often torn between Mr. Nice Guy, who generally ended up as father of her kids, and the hell-raising jerk who represented offbeat romance and adventure. Men, for all their faults, were occasionally forced to choose between Miss Wholesome Girl Next Door, who generally ended up as mother to his children, and the wild sexpot who couldn't keep her body off him. For Pitt, there could be no agonized decision. Late tomorrow evening, the ship would dock at the Chilean port of Punta Arenas in Tierra del Fuego, where Maeve and Deirdre would take a commuter flight to Santiago. From there, they could book a direct flight to Australia. A waste of time, he thought, to allow his imagination to run amok. He did not dare to hope that he would ever lay eyes on either one of them again. He slipped a hand below the table and touched the folded fax in his pants pocket. Overcome by curiosity, he had communicated with St. Julian Perlmutter, a close family friend who had accumulated the world's foremost library of shipwreck information. A well-known party-giver and gourmand, Perlmutter was well-connected in Washington circles and knew where most of the skeletons were buried. Pitt had put in a call and asked his friend to check on the lady's family background. Perlmutter faxed him a brief report in less than an hour with a promise of a more in-depth account within 2 days. These were no ordinary women from common circumstances. If the unmarried men, and maybe even a few of the married, knew that Maeve and Deirdre's father, Arthur Dorset, was head of a diamond empire second only to De Beers and the sixth richest man in the world, they might have pulled out all stops in begging the lady's hand in marriage. The section of the report that struck him as odd was a drawing of the Dorset corporate hallmark that Perlmutter included. Instead of the obvious, a diamond on some sort of background, the Dorset logotype was a serpent undulating through the water. The ship's officer on duty came up alongside Pitt and spoke softly. "Admiral Sandecker is on the satellite phone and would like to talk to you." "Thank you. I'll take the call in my cabin." Unobtrusively, Pitt pushed back his chair, rose and left the dining room, unnoticed by all except Giordino. Pitt exhaled a deep breath, removed his shoes, and unlimbered in his leather chair. "Admiral, this is Dirk." "About time," Sandecker grunted. "I could have written my next speech before a congressional budget committee." "Sorry, sir, I was attending a party." There was a pause. "A party on a Pneuma vessel dedicated to scientific research?" "A farewell get-together for the ladies we rescued from Polar Queen," Pitt explained. "I'd better not hear of any questionable actions." Sandecker was as open and receptive as the next man, but discussing anything less than scientific procedure on board his fleet of research ships was not his strong point. Pitt took great joy in needling the admiral. "Do you mean hanky-panky, sir?" "Call it what you may. Just see that the crew plays it straight. We don't need any exposure in the scandal rags." "May I ask the nature of this call, admiral?" Sandecker never used the phone simply to reach out and touch someone. "I require the services of you and Giordino here in Washington damn quick. How soon can you fly off Ice Hunter for Punta Arenas?" "We're within the helicopter's range now," said Pitt. "We can lift off within the hour." "I've arranged for a military jet transport to be waiting for your arrival at the airport." Sandecker was never one to let the grass grow under his feet, Pitt thought. Then Al and I will see you sometime tomorrow afternoon. We have much to discuss. Any new developments? An Indonesian freighter was found off Howland Island with a dead crew. Did the body show the same symptoms as those on Polar Queen? We'll never know, answered Sandecker. It blew up and sank while a boarding party was investigating, killing them as well. That's a twist. And to add to the mystery, Sandecker continued, a Chinese junk luxury yacht owned and sailed by the movie actor Garrett Converse is missing in the same area. His legion of fans won't be happy when they learn he died from unknown causes. His loss will probably get more coverage from the news media than all the dead on the cruise ship, Sandecker acknowledged. How is my theory on sound waves played? Pitt asked. Jaeger's working it through his computers as we speak. With luck, he'll have gleaned more data by the time you and Al walk through the door. I have to tell you, he and Rudy Gunn think you may be onto something. See you soon, Admiral, Pitt said and hung up. He sat motionless and stared at the phone, hoping to God they were on the right track. The dishes were cleared and the party in the ship's dining room had become loud with laughter as everyone competed in telling shaggy dog stories. As with Pitt, hardly anyone noticed that Giordino also had departed the festivities. Captain Dempsey entered into the humor of the evening with an old, old joke about a rich farmer who sends his ne'er-do-well son to college and makes him take along the old family dog, Rover. The kid then uses the old mangy dog to con his old man out of spending money by claiming he needs $1,000 because his professors claim they can make Rover read, write, and talk. By the time he came to the punchline, everybody laughed more from sheer relief it was over than from the humor. On one wall nearby, a ship's phone rang, and the first officer answered. Without a word, he nodded in Dempsey's direction. The captain caught the gesture, came over, and took the call. He listened a moment, hung up the receiver, and started for the open passageway leading to the stern deck. "Are you all joked out?" Van Fleet called after him. "I have to stand by for the helicopter's departure," he answered. "What's the mission?" "No mission. Pitt and Giordino have been ordered back to Washington by the Admiral post-haste. They're flying off to the mainland to catch a military transport." Maeve overheard and grabbed Dempsey by the arm.
When are they leaving?
He was surprised by the sudden strength of her grip. They should be lifting off about now. Deirdre came over and stood next to Maeve.
He must not care enough about you to say goodbye.
Maeve felt as if a giant hand had suddenly reached inside her and squeezed her heart. Anguish filled her body. She rushed out the door onto the deck. Pitt had only lifted the helicopter a scant 3 meters off the pad when she came running into view. She could clearly see both men through the helicopter's large windows. Giordino looked down, saw her, and waved. Pitt had both hands busy and could only respond with a warm grin and a nod. He expected to see her smile and wave in return, but her face seemed drawn in fear. She cupped her hands and cried out to him, but the noise of the turbine exhaust and thumping rotor blades drowned out her words. He could only shake his head and shrug in reply. Maeve shouted again, this time with lowered hands as if somehow willing her thoughts into his mind. Too late. The helicopter shot into the air vertically and dipped over the side of the ship. She sagged to her knees on the deck, head in her hands, sobbing, as the turquoise aircraft flew over the endless marching swells of the sea. Giordino looked back through his side window and saw Maeve slumped on the deck, Dempsey walking toward her.
"I wonder what the fuss was all about," he said curiously.
"What fuss?" asked Pitt.
"Maeve. She acted like a Greek mourner at a funeral."
Concentrating on controlling the helicopter, Pitt had missed Maeve's unexpected display of grief.
"Maybe she hates goodbyes," he said, feeling a wave of remorse.
"She tried to tell us something," Giordino said vaguely, reliving the scene in his mind. Pitt did not take a backward glance. He felt deep regret at not having said his farewells. It was rude to have denied Maeve the courtesy of a friendly hug and a few words.
He had genuinely felt attracted to her. She had aroused emotions within him that he hadn't experienced since losing someone very dear to him in the sea north of Hawaii many years ago. Her name was Summer, and not a day passed that he didn't recall her lovely face and the scent of plumeria. There was no way for him to tell if the attraction was mutual. There were a multitude of expressions in her eyes, but nothing he saw that indicated desire. And nothing in her conversation had led him to believe they were more than merely two people touching briefly before passing into the night. He tried to remain detached and tell himself that their affair had nowhere to go. They were bound to lives on opposite sides of the world. It was best to let her fade into a pleasant memory of what might have been if the moon and stars had shone in the right direction. "Weird," Giordino said, staring ahead at the restless sea as the islands north of Cape Horn grew in the distance. "Weird," Pitt echoed in a tone of indifference. "What Maeve yelled as we lifted off." "How could you hear anything over the chopper's racket?"
"I couldn't. It was all in the way she formed the words with her mouth."
Pitt grinned. "Since when do you read lips?"
"I'm not kidding, pal," Giordino said in dead seriousness. "I know the message she tried to get across to us."
Pitt knew from long years of experience and friendship that when Giordino turned profound, he worked purely from essentials. You didn't step into his circle, spar with him, and step out unscathed. Pitt mentally remained outside the circle and peered in.
"Spit it out. What did she say?"
Giordino slowly turned and looked at Pitt, his deep-set black eyes reflective and somber at the same time.
"I could swear she said, 'Help me.'